Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Next week, 27 communities across the state will host week-long events targeting young professionals. Wisconsin has been seeking ways to attract and retain talent to fill workforce needs, including a roughly $7 million marketing campaign aimed at drawing Midwest millennials to Wisconsin. Mary Lois Boca is the Sector and Strategies Coordinator for the Northwest Wisconsin Workforce Investment Board. She oversees the Young Professionals Group in the Shawamigan Bay Area. And Emily Jeffress is the owner of Lace and Brass Events in Bayfield. The two spoke with me by phone yesterday about events taking place next week and what young professionals want in their search for jobs and quality of life.
Young Professionals Week is actually a week-long platform for discovery, adventure, and meaningful conversations about issues that matter among young professionals in Wisconsin. It is a statewide initiative, and it was actually started by an organization out of Milwaukee called Newaukee. They started holding these events, and they dedicated 1 week in Milwaukee to specifically recognizing young professionals, and they sort of saw that it became of interest to other communities in the state, and they made a goal to have a Young Professionals Week in every county across the state. And so we are part of that statewide initiative. And our Young Professionals group started, it's sort of been in existence for a few years. It's ebbed and flowed. And this group currently just got a new leadership team that they voted in. There's four of them who have shown extreme interest in continuing this group and developing various programs for the group. So out of that, YP Week for the Shawamigan Bay formed, and these events came into play, and we're excited to have 5 events this year to be able to host for our region.
Emily, you're going to be taking part in YP Week, and you're going to be talking next week about your experience as a young entrepreneur in the Shawamigan Bay area, right?
Yes. Thursday night, I will be presenting at Business on Stage along with 3 other young professionals. And, you know, we'll just be really talking about our businesses, our experiences with starting up and, you know, challenges that we've had along the way and things that we've found that's benefited us from this beautiful community that we have, and just really going over what we've experienced being young professionals in the area.
Okay. Well, and Mary Lois, can you kind of give me an idea of some of the events that are going to be taking place and what you're hoping to accomplish with them?
Absolutely. So we tried to have a wide variety of events this year to be able to draw from different people to come to the events. So on Sunday, we have our Earth Day community service event, and that's going to be at Prentice Park. Hopefully the weather holds for us. And that's just going to be a big park-wide cleanup. We might do some painting of some of the equipment and then have a big cookout picnic as well. So that's our fun little community service day event. On Tuesday, we will be hosting a meet and greet for Middle West Management, and that's the managing company for Bon Iver, the musician. And the manager, Kyle Frenette, will be here with us to talk about their business model and a little bit about how he got started and how he sort of continued his business in the music management industry. Then we'll have the Exciting Business on Stage, Young Entrepreneurs version, on Thursday night, and that's at 6 p.m. That's where Emily will be speaking. Just like she said, really featuring young business owners in the region and talking about how they got their business started, what their challenges were, and why they chose to start their business in the Shawamigan Bay. Friday night's a fun social night. We have 90s trivia, and that's going to be at HPL Bar in Ashland. And then our final event is Saturday. We're doing a distillery tour at the new Copper Crow Distillery in Red Cliff. And they're really sort of doing this is part of their soft opening that they'll be doing. And that's going to be that Saturday. And we'll get to tour and try some of the product and then go home with our own little souvenir shot glass as well. And the cost for that one, that's the only one that has a cost. And that one is $5.
Okay.
So we're really excited just to have a big variety of different things that people can come to.
Gotcha. Well, I guess I was just hoping that we could talk a little bit in general overall about some of the challenges that young professionals are encountering, at least in the Shawamigan Bay Area, you know, as they're looking for jobs or looking at starting their own business. And Mary Lois, you want to start?
Sure. So there's definitely challenges. We definitely live in an aging area. A lot of our population is starting to retire, so that also holds a lot of opportunity for young professionals currently. There are certain things that young professionals look for, and things like outdoor recreation and entertainment and community involvement. And those things are in our community. We just need to make sure that they're accessible and maybe even appropriate for young people today. So that's part of this group, is making sure that there are events happening in our region, so that young professionals are not only able to develop career-wise, but also having that social aspect of their life that's really important to them. So, you know, we see that young professionals, when they come to this group, they're sort of seeking that networking. And we do hold business courses as well. We will be having a Business 101 class coming up as one of our events in the future. So it's really an opportunity to have these young professionals be able to grow with the community as well.
Emily, you actually moved to the area, right?
Yes. My husband and I moved to the Bayfield area about 6 years ago from Northwest Indiana. And so we moved up here not having any family or friends or knowing anybody. And like I said, that was about 6 years ago. And, you know, moving here, I at the time wasn't intending on starting my own business. We moved here. My husband had gotten a job in Bayfield County. And, you know, I know one of the first things that we had a little harder time with moving here was finding housing. And luckily, I feel like that's improved somewhat since we did move up here. We really had only about two options at the time. But like I said, I feel like that's improving, definitely. But I think that's one thing that, you know, young professionals are going to be needing, especially if they're moving here to try it out, you know, maybe for a season or a year or two, you know, and not necessarily wanting to purchase a house and, you know, put their roots in for sure, but really want to try out the community.
Yeah, so, I know that the housing aspect is something that a lot of the fruit farms have been looking at, just to have seasonal help in the summertime to be able to put them up somewhere so that they're not having to drive 45 or half hour across the bay to get to their
job. Absolutely. And there's some businesses, you know, I know particular in Bayfield, some businesses that, you know, they do have seasonal employees that are purchasing houses to our, you know, housing for their employees. And in fact, my brother is coming up this summer. He is a freshman in college, and he will be coming up and staying for the summer. And his employer will, you know, has purchased a house and is renting it out to the employees. So I think that's a fantastic opportunity, you know, just to allow these, you know, young professionals, young adults to get up into the area and have the opportunity to, you know, try it out and see what it's like, and then, you know, hopefully come back.
Wow. Well, that seems like, you know, kind of a special circumstance, because I don't know that every employer would be able to purchase a house to house their employees. I mean, Mary Lois, do you hear conversations about housing or any other issues that are on the top of mind of employers as they're trying to draw in or attract young professionals to take jobs?
Absolutely. Housing is always a part of the conversation. Not only affordability of the housing, but the quality of the housing. And that's one thing that we partner with our economic development folks and other partners in the community to look at ways that we can improve housing and what kind of initiatives can, you know, we participate in, because in the end, workforce ties back into housing and all the other amenities. Another project that we're working on is opening a new daycare facility, because that's another thing that young professionals are looking for. And if our communities aren't able to offer that, they're unlikely to take a job here. So by developing a new daycare facility, that's really providing even more desire for people to move here. There are other things like, of course, broadband and internet access. And again, those are things that we as a workforce board look at as well. A few other things would be, you know, good schools and commute time. we do have a lot of those things. You know, when it comes to all of those items, we have affordable housing, we have good schools, it's a short commute, and I really think that's the good selling point of our community is we're have that small town feel with the accessibility of having everything right there where you live, and that good sort of small town feel and community involvement that the Chequamegon Bay really brings to our individuals here.
Yeah. Well, and I know a lot of these discussions have been going on a long time. You know, you mentioned the daycare facility and the need for childcare. I mean, if you're both working parents, what are you going to do if you don't have a whole lot of daycare providers in the area?
Exactly.
Oftentimes you find one parent staying home. I guess, Emily, I'm just curious to hear your experience. You know, when you moved to the area with your husband, I mean, what were some of the things that you both were looking for in northern Wisconsin while you were making this decision?
Well, you know, we had always wanted to move to northern Wisconsin. We didn't know exactly where we would end up. And we had actually never been up here before my husband interviewed for his job up here. So we had come up here and just absolutely fell in love with the area. And, you know, we both love doing things outdoors. And so that really attracted us up here of all of the, not only the outdoor activities and opportunities, but just, you know, the sense of the community here. And, you know, everybody has the same feeling, up here is, you know, they all have this love for the outdoors, for Lake Superior. And just really getting outdoors, and that was something that was really important to us. And then also know we wanted to have a family, you know, in the soon future. And we really, really loved that up here. And, you know, at the time, you know, my husband, he was working, and I was working part-time when we first moved up here. And soon after, we had my son, and I didn't want to work full-time because we didn't have anybody else up here to help with childcare. And so that's when I, you know, really started thinking about what our options were and what opportunities we had. And just from some experiences that I had had prior with, you know, weddings and being involved with a venue for 3 years working there and planning my own and helping friends and just, you know, always being very organized and, you know, a planner, so to say. And, you know, when I started looking into this area and seeing this fantastic opportunity of destination weddings that are here, and there wasn't any wedding planners in Bayfield. And so it just kind of one of those one things, you know, led to another. And I, you know, determined that I wanted to start my business planning weddings, events, and elopements. And it's just grown beautifully since then, but it wasn't something that I thought we were going to do when we first moved here because I thought it was too rural. You know, where we had moved from, it was much, much bigger area. And so once we started living here and I, like I said, started realizing this great destination wedding spot we have here, I actually realized this is a perfect place to start this business for me, and I was very right.
Yeah, you built your opportunity out of the character of the area. You found a niche based on...
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess, Mary Lois, you know, with Emily's experience, do you hear similar experiences from other people living in the area where they're kind of creating their own opportunities because it's kind of difficult maybe to find something else that they like?
I definitely think so. And some of the other young professionals that are going to be presenting at the Business on Stage event represent that as well. One of the presenters opened a new restaurant in town, and that is one thing, you know, that we do need is we need more restaurants in our community, and he found great success in opening a new restaurant. And then other things like one of the gals is presenting, she's a designer and she does graphic designing. And that's something that, again, it's a little more, she can do it from home and provides a little more flexibility for her schedule. And even living in a rural area like we do, she's able to attract these clients that maybe aren't right outside her back door, where she's able to form this whole business for herself and live in the beautiful area that she does without having to drive, you know, in a commute 45 minutes a day or however long it may be. She's sort of set up this business for herself that provides, and she gets to still enjoy the beauty of where we live.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I was just kind of wondering too, if you get a lot of feedback when you're talking with young professionals who may want to locate in the area and, you know, the rural nature of it and how that impacts their decision. You know, obviously Ashland and Washburn and Bayfield are fairly close to U.S. Highway 2, but, you know, the next major largest city is Duluth or Hayward, I guess. So what do you see as far as, you know, when you're trying to talk to people who are considering maybe moving to the area?
I really like to think back to myself. I'm not from this area originally either, and I ended up sticking around because I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the lake. I fell in love with the hiking abilities and all the recreational activities that are here, the people that are here, and that small town feel. And I think when it comes down to it, when we're talking to young professionals who are looking at moving here, it really has to be a good fit for them too. We want to attract people that are interested in those aspects of our community. You know, you don't want to bring people here who might not enjoy those different aspects. You know, we're trying to find the people that are really excited about everything that this community has to offer. And I think that's where the conversation has to revolve around is, if someone's here being recruited for a job, you not only want that job to be a good fit for them, but we want this community to be a good fit, and we want them to be a good fit for our community as well.
Well, and Emily, how good a fit do you feel like Bayfield and the Shawangan Bay area has been for you? Obviously, you've built your business off of it, so it sounds like it's working out really well. But, I mean, are there things that you wish were available or would make it easier as a young professional?
You know, when we moved here, we were looking for a rural area, and it's really interesting because even though we are about an hour and a half from Duluth, you know, because we have this community in Bayfield, Washburn, Ashland area, I don't feel like I'm in the middle of nowhere, even though I am surrounded by just woods. You know, I feel like the community here is incredibly supportive. And just like Mary Lois had said, they, you know, everybody has the same thing that they love, and that is the outdoors we have here, Lake Superior, and you know, this small community. You know, that is of course spread out, you know, in a big area. But you know, when I started my business, my son was about 6 months old, I believe, at the time. And luckily, starting it, of course, it was slower because just starting a business and trying to find clients. And so I feel like for me personally, my business has grown just perfectly with what is comfortable for myself and my family. And as my kids are getting a little bit older, it is much easier to start getting a little busier and busier. And, you know, when I had started my business, I had decided to join the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce. And it was, I think, like the best decision that I had made as far as my business goes in the very beginning, just because I didn't know anybody here. And of course, that meant they didn't know me. And that allowed me to really just get to know the other business owners in the area, which when I had started was, there was quite an age difference in the beginning. I felt like I was the only person there that was my age. And then now, 4 years later, I see, you know, the chamber hosts, you know, about once a month an after hours meeting. And it's a social networking gathering. And it's fantastic for, you know, those of us that have transplanted to the area. And in 4 years since joining the chamber, I've definitely seen an increase in young professionals that are moving to the area, starting businesses, buying businesses, and, you know, attending these meetings. And it's fantastic. I just love, you know, seeing all of the business members and, you know, month after month, and having this, you know, working relationship with them and having an interest in each other's businesses, where, you know, in a bigger city, you wouldn't have that. You wouldn't know, you know, most of the business owners that are in the area and what, you know, they're doing. And it's beautiful what we have here. And I feel like we can all sense it, that this community is very special.
So basically, you feel like you, a lot of your decision on where you wanted to live or what you wanted to do for work had a lot tied to the quality of life that you would have. And basically, that maybe what's attracting young professionals to this area or to the Shawangan Bay area is the fact that they can have these connections within the community, that they're not very anonymous, that they can make an impact in their schools or in the community, and that they can still make a living without having to spend a lot of time in traffic.
Exactly. I feel this community is, you know, there's a lot of locals, but there is a lot of transplants as well. And so I feel like it's very welcoming. You know, if you're moving to a new area and you don't know anybody, that can be very intimidating, and some people won't even make that leap. Where my husband and I, we knew we wanted to move to northern Wisconsin. I had grown up vacationing in the Tomahawk area for years. Again, had never been this far north. And so when we got the opportunity, when he was offered a job, and we say, let's try it, you know, it'll get us up there. And so we moved here, and it was the best decision we ever made. And it just worked out perfectly because we hadn't picked this place. I feel like it picked us. And, you know, once we moved here, we just really started feeling part of this community. And, you know, it's a really great opportunity for people who are wanting to move, you know, especially there's so many people up here that have vacationed up here or vacation every summer and want to move up here. I've talked to many people, even clients of mine, who want to move up here, and they're just kind of waiting for that opportunity for a job to get up here. And so, you know, I think if you can get up here and, you know, and either start your own business or be working somewhere with the goal of starting your own business, it's a very welcoming community.
Okay. Well, Mary Lois, I was wondering if you could give any perspective from the employer point of view. I mean, because we're looking at, I think the latest job numbers just came out today. You know, Wisconsin has a 2.9% unemployment rate, which means, you know, there are more jobs than there are people looking for them right now. And so what are you hearing from Shawangan Bay Area employers about what they're experiencing as far as trying to find workers to fill positions, especially if we're going to see people age out of those positions in the near future?
Exactly. And you're right. In the end, we have a numbers problem. There are more jobs available currently than people. So how do we address that? How do we get people to our community? And it is a buzz right now in the workforce community. You know, talent attraction and recruitment is huge. And how are we going to get people to want to move to these areas? And there's some really exciting new initiatives that are coming about because of this, some sort of new ways of looking at recruitment and workforce development. We as a workforce board, we actually just put on a event called Superior Talent, and it was specifically designed to bring young professionals to the Shawangan Bay area. And it came about actually with the healthcare community in our region. They noticed in the healthcare employers that they were all sort of fighting over the same employees. You know, one person would hire an RN and then they'd go to the other company and then they'd come back to the other one. And so they all sort of came together and said, we have a problem. There's not enough people here to fill the actual positions that we have. So they came to us as a workforce board and we developed Superior Talent. And what it was actually a 3-day all-inclusive trip for healthcare students to come to the Shawangan Bay, meet with employers, explore the area, socialize, meet with other young people in the area, and see if this was a good fit for them. So we had students from across Wisconsin and Minnesota come and meet with employers, and they were actually all really excited about the region. Most of them had never been here before, and they were thrilled to hear what great employment opportunities are here and how incredible this area is. A lot of them were really surprised. And we actually have several of them looking to move here currently from that program. So we're seeing things like that pop up in workforce. And I think it's really the time for employers to start thinking about those different initiatives and thinking about how can we recruit young people not only to our jobs but to our communities, and what does that mean? You know, we're seeing different trends in workforce as well. Things We're seeing a switch in more flexible scheduling and options to work from home. Maybe your employer is helping offset some of the costs of those daycare costs. Some of those other sort of alternative benefits that employers really need to be looking at. But then also, how does that community play a role? How are we making sure that if there's these young professional groups, you know, that employers are supporting those groups and making sure there's events and activities that are really geared for young people to make sure that they're wanting to stay and thrive in the community where we're trying to recruit them. Okay. But it's really exciting.
Well, and I guess, Emily, you know, based on kind of what she's saying about the what Mary Lois is saying about being supported in the community, I know you said you feel like there's a good sense of community in that area and everyone is very welcoming. But what about the things like schools and childcare and broadband? Do you feel like the area has the infrastructure or the things that are needed, like housing, to be able to support young professionals who want to locate here?
Yes, and I think it is. We do have those things here. Some of them might need a little more improving still. Since moving here, I think that the opportunity for housing has grown. When we were moving, we only had about two apartments to choose from. And so I feel like that is getting better and better. And it's getting better and better because young professionals are moving here, and we know a handful of people who have bought houses and renovated them specifically for rentals. And so I feel like that's growing, because if this community is important to you and you're wanting to move up here, you know, I feel like you can make a spot for yourself. There's opportunity for that. And if you find there's something that is maybe needing a little more work, if there isn't as much childcare opportunities, then I feel like people are doing something about it instead of just making that a decision factor and turning away. I feel like they're still moving here and they're still, you know, having the concept of, you know, I'm going to do something about this and, you know, help improve it, whether that's purchasing housing and, you know, renovating it for rentals, or, you know, opening up daycares, or just being supportive of those that are there. And, you know, things like the internet, you know, there's no problems at all when you, especially in the cities. But, you know, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you might be limited on who you can go through. But I don't think that we're as rural in this area where you won't have what you need to move here.
Well, is there anything that I'm missing that either of you would like to add?
You know, I guess one of the things that when I was first starting my business, that because I didn't know many people here at all, I was sort of looking for some type of mentorship program, which we didn't have one exactly. There was a couple people in the community that I did end up reaching out to and, you know, getting advice from, and so they sort of became mentors to me, but it wasn't necessarily a program. And so I think that's something that could possibly be beneficial to the community, having some type of mentorship program for those that are looking to start businesses or, you know, looking to move here, and just someone to kind of be a, you know, go-to person, or just, you know, even just a friendly face when you move here. You know, even though we do have this great community and people are supportive, sometimes, you know, it's hard for people to reach out. They might feel like they're, you know, bothering somebody. And so I was lucky, like I said, to have a couple of people that kind of took me under their wing and, you know, helped me with just some basic business things as far as this community goes, and just some advice of do's and don'ts. And, you know, especially just getting kind of started and running a business, it's so social media based. And so just getting some tips for that as well, that was very beneficial with starting my business.
Finding the right people to connect with that can answer the questions or guide you down the path.
Yes, which, of course, the Young Professional Meetings and this group is perfect for that. You know, and that wasn't around when I had started. And so I'm sure that's very beneficial to those starting their businesses now.
I think that's really exciting to hear, Emily. And actually, this new leadership team in the Young Professionals group they've talked about sort of maybe not a specific mentor, but like a welcoming group who, I know that our chambers currently do like welcoming packages and such from people move to town, but this one would be more geared specifically for young professionals. And I think that that's something that, like you said, is very important. And in such a rural area, you know, you don't have those constant connections that you might get in a big city. And so by having that as an available resource that you can reach out to is really great. And I'm looking forward to that young professional group sort of developing a welcoming team to the area. I think that would just be a really great asset.
Well, I really appreciate both of you taking the time to talk with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Again, you were listening to Mary Lois Boca with the Northwest Wisconsin Workforce Investment Board and Bayfield entrepreneur Emily Jeffress. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin has been trying to address the brain drain, or the number of educated workers moving out of state. But Tessa Conroy says the numbers are actually lower than some may think. Conroy is an economic development specialist with UW Extension. She talks about the state's brain drain and what can be done to gain workers, especially in rural Wisconsin.
When you look at our out-migration rates compared to the other states in the U.S., they're not really especially high. I would say we actually have relatively low out-migration rates, so it's not the case that people are leaving Wisconsin at exceptionally high rate or anything like that. I would say we actually do a pretty good job of keeping people in the state. The problem is that, or the potential problem if we're looking to kind of increase our numbers, is that we're not seeing people come into the state. So good. It's good to have low out-migration, but when we look at in-migration, we'd actually like to see those numbers be pretty high, and that's where the trouble is, that our in-migration numbers are quite low, and that's true of all the Midwest, that kind of the Rust Belt or these upper Midwest states just aren't very desirable locations when you look at where people are moving.
So are some of the more desirable areas then the more metro areas of the East Coast or out on the West Coast?
That seems to be the case. I mean, for example, Colorado, no matter what it does, seems to be able to add 30, 40,000 kind of what we call young, single, talented people. And so I think that's a number of factors. Colorado was a relatively cheap place to live for a long time. It's a very high amenity state in terms of kind of the natural elements and attractions that they have to offer. But I think it's also the case that Wisconsin, when it comes to like a big metro area, we just don't have something like the large metro areas in other states. For example, we did, you know, something like Denver. We have Madison and Milwaukee, which of course have a lot to offer. But when you look at the size of the labor market, it's just not quite where like the Twin Cities or Chicago are.
And so, you know, as we're looking at populations and demographics in rural versus urban Wisconsin, it seems like there's a lot of towns and cities and counties that are seeing a growing aging population, and employers are mm-hmm. trying to draw in young talent to fill vacancies that might be coming up. So what are you seeing then statewide in as far as differences between rural and urban communities?
I would say it is typical for our rural areas to lose, you know, a younger population as they leave to go get skills and training that maybe they can't get locally, for example. We talk a lot about boomerang migration in economic development and the idea that, you know, we're going to lose some young people. They're going to go, you know, get training or get their first jobs. But hopefully when they are married, when they're ready to settle down, when they're thinking about kind of where to put down roots permanently, that they think about these rural areas and maybe where they grew up. So eventually they come back, they leave and come back. And I think that that's kind of one strategy when we're thinking about economic development for rural areas in terms of, you know, do we have a community? Are we taking steps to make sure that when people are thinking about where to settle down, that our community is desirable? So that's where placemaking comes in. So do we have good schools? Do we have good roads? Is there green space and parks? These types of things can all make a community desirable alongside good job opportunities.
So what seem to be the qualities that young professionals are most desiring then if they are going to locate in any community across Wisconsin?
I mean, of course, so much about where we live does have to do with job opportunities. I wouldn't deny that. But it also seems to be the case that they want high quality of life. And that's going to be different for everybody. That's kind of in the eye of the beholder. But it does seem to be the case that oftentimes, like natural amenities, so outdoor recreation is valuable, as well as personal amenities. So, you know, people wanting to work out and go to restaurants and that sort of thing. I think that people look at schools, that's part of the conversation. So it just depends from person to person, but I think there are some common themes out there about what people are looking for. Good housing is also, of course, part of the story.
You've said here that rural Wisconsin is entrepreneurial. So what about rural Wisconsin makes people want to locate there and start up their own business as opposed to taking a job? Is it just because there are fewer jobs in rural Wisconsin, or what are we seeing?
I do think that's part of it, that coming out of the recession, our rural areas haven't had as robust recovery as our urban spaces. So in a location maybe with limited wage and salary job opportunities available, people have become quite resourceful and they've started to create jobs for themselves. And I think that's part of it. We do see more proprietorship. So these are kind of a tax status, but they're indicative of at least one self-employed person. We do see more proprietorships and that businesses survive longer on average in rural areas. So there seem to be these seeds of entrepreneurialism in rural communities. And again, I think part of that's the wage and salary job market. I think part of it is that a lot of people really like their rural location. They like living in a rural area and they want to stay. And that might mean, again, kind of finding a way to sustain themselves in a rural community so that they can enjoy the outdoors the way they always have, for example. But I also think what might be going on that's interesting is that Wisconsin seems to be a popular destination for retirees. We have, again, lots of lakeshore property, for example, lots of beautiful spaces, especially in the north. And to the extent that our retired communities are kind of headed there, I think that this is a particularly interesting group of people that can really benefit a community potentially. Hopefully they've had the time to accumulate some financial capital, some wealth over time. They have years of work experience potentially. So these are people that could be pretty entrepreneurial just because they do have experience combined with maybe some access to resources. So I think that that's encouraging. Oftentimes, retirees are also engaged kind of in a spirit of volunteerism. They're civically engaged. So there's potential for this group of people to really, if they're integrated into the community and, you know, welcome to that sort of thing, to breathe new life into rural areas.
Is the character of rural Wisconsin changing compared to urban Wisconsin? You've said here that it seems to be far more dependent on production of goods and sectors like agriculture and mining and manufacturing. Are we seeing that continue in rural areas, or are they kind of having to reimagine what types of jobs will help draw in and keep their communities thriving?
I think it depends on, you know, kind of where you're looking in rural Wisconsin. For example, I've been encouraged that the most recent manufacturing data that I've looked at in terms of job openings and hirings has been pretty strong, and I think pretty strong in the Midwest specifically. They don't have data for Wisconsin, but I think that's encouraging. I think a lot of our communities that do have a strong manufacturing base, so that's good news, and maybe there are opportunities, for example, to really leverage this strength. So I think in some places, kind of we're hopeful of, you know, maintaining a certain kind of industrial composition that makes sense for the area. But I think other places, you know, they might see change coming, you know, as the economy evolves and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, how does education play a role in what we're seeing as far as people coming in or going out of these communities?
The way I think about education mostly is kind of through the lens of entrepreneurship, because that's what I study. And it, you know, has been the case that people with experience up to a college degree are more entrepreneurial. And I think entrepreneurs, as the kind of research shows, are a pretty important part of communities and economic development and job creation. So that's good. But I also think education enters into the migration story in an important way, in that It's for most people, it seems to be the case that having access to, you know, high quality education for kids is an important factor in kind of deciding where to live.
And so if some school districts or higher educational institutions seem to be struggling, then that may...
I think that could be problematic, just because, again, it is one of the things people seem to think about when they're deciding where to live. But I think what also kind of deserves some consideration is that oftentimes in our rural communities, the public sector is a really important employer. Our road departments, our post offices, our schools are really important employers. So when we see a school struggling or even closed, that can have really significant consequences for the job opportunities available in a particular vocation.
Well, what do you think that communities in rural Wisconsin need to be thinking about as they're looking at people moving into or out of their communities?
I think that, of course, you know, alongside job creation that we talked about placemaking, you know, is your community a desirable place to live? Because if people are probably going to leave, those that can't get the skills or training they need locally, but are they going to want to come back at the point that they're ready to buy a home or put down roots somewhere long term? So that placemaking, that quality of life component is really important. I would think about that. And I would also think about ways to leverage those seeds of entrepreneurialism. As I said, I think they're already there. We have lots of self-employed and proprietorships. There seems to be entrepreneurial activity already. Businesses survive longer in rural areas, so what can we do to support our entrepreneurs? Are there, you know, businesses who are already started and would like to grow? So I think these are two focus areas in particular that could be promising in rural areas.
And as far as just looking at growth in rural areas too, you know, there's kind of been this trend where people will look, or communities will look, for one large employer to move in or try to attract, you know, a significant number of jobs to the area. And that's not the way to go.
Our research really says it's not. I mean, there are those stories out there. Don't get me wrong. Of course, there are communities who have been able to attract a large employer, and that can make a big difference. But for most rural communities, the likelihood of that ever happening is very, very small, and the ability to afford, oftentimes there's an incentive package attached to those relocations, the ability to afford an incentive that could attract a firm is also, you know, pretty rare for most rural communities. So for that reason, I would say that oftentimes the kind of economic development that's going to be most successful is going to come from within rather than looking externally and thinking that a firm, you know, that if we can just get a firm to move in, I mean, that's the story of my hometown. If we could just get a large employer to move in, that everything would be better. But, you know, 20 years later, it still hasn't happened. And perhaps those efforts and energies and resources would have been better spent really reinvesting into the local assets.
Again, you were just listening to Tessa Conroy, Economic Development Specialist with UW Extension. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio's Week in Review. The U.S. Senate blocked a vote on a bill that environmentalists feared could lead to the spread of more invasive species throughout the Great Lakes, but the shipping industry says action is needed to provide a uniform standard under current law. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and U.S. Coast Guard both oversee the discharge of water from ships' ballast tanks to prevent the spread of invasive species. The U.S. Coast Guard Authorization Act would have given the Coast Guard sole oversight. Alliance for the Great Lakes spokeswoman Jennifer Caddick says the Senate's vote was a win for the Great Lakes, but she says lawmakers could still take up the bill.
So we would hope that the Senate leadership would bring forward a clean Coast Guard Authorization Act without these provisions that would be harmful to the Great Lakes.
Shipping advocates say they're disappointed with the Senate vote, including Glenn Nekfasil with the Lake Carriers Association.
But we will continue our efforts to replace the current patchwork quilt of ballast water regulations with a uniform federal standard.
The Lake Carriers Association represents the U.S. flagged fleet, which transports roughly 90 million tons of cargo on the Great Lakes each year. A former international business leader has been named the next president of Northland College in Ashland. Wakefield native Marvin Suomi will become the college's 14th president in July. Suomi oversaw the operations of real estate and construction company Kajima for nearly four decades. He was also a teaching fellow for the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation in Princeton. Suomi says his priorities as president will include raising the visibility of Northland College.
I want the major foundations to know about it. I want us to be applying for support, because I think for Northland, you know, unless we have significant foundation support, we are going to continue to struggle.
Northland announced staff layoffs and pay cuts for employees last spring to deal with a $3.5 million budget shortfall. Suomi says he's committed to growing recruitment and retention efforts at the college.
With some urgency, I want to say that I want to make certain that our retention program and retaining students and making certain that students are encouraged to finish out their 4 years at Northland is very, very important to me.
Suomi says higher education has been challenged by declining enrollment since the Great Recession, but he hopes Northland can capitalize on its niche as an environmental liberal arts college.
I'm here to say that Northland's going to make it, and it has the niche and it has the faculty support and certainly the trustee support that I'm very encouraged. Otherwise, I wouldn't take this job.
Suomi will replace current Northland College president Mike Miller, who announced his retirement last fall at the end of this academic year. The U.S. Forest Service says it may be a while before people can head out on the trails in northern Wisconsin. Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest spokeswoman Hillary Markin says they're going to have to push back the opening of trails due to all the snow this spring.
Yeah, so typically trails open May 1st, and then campgrounds open usually the weekend of fishing opener, which this weekend would have been May 3rd. And usually throughout the month of April, you know, the snow melt's gone and we're able to get out there, you know, clean out the restrooms that are there. We're able to turn on water systems, you know, do hazard tree analysis. So we go out and make sure, you know, during the winter months for any trees damaged that may injure, you know, somebody recreating in one of our sites. And so we go out and remove those.
Markin says the last time they had to delay trail openings was in 2014. The Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest has around 300 miles of motorized trails for snowmobiles and ATVs. New research shows tribal forests in northern Wisconsin have older trees and better plant diversity than surrounding state or national forests. The study examined forests on four Indian reservations in northern Wisconsin. The study looked at forests on the Menominee, Bad River, Lac du Flambeau, and Le Coudray reservations. It found tribal forests kept essentially all of their plant diversity from 50 years ago. That's according to Don Waller, professor of botany and environmental studies at UW-Madison. Waller says the difference could come down to fewer deer on reservations.
The deer seem to be curtailing tree regeneration. They've decimated the understory cover and diversity in many areas, including those state parks that banned hunting for some years. On the Indian reservations, we have lower deer densities and a different approach to managing both forests and wildlife.
According to the study, tribal forests hosted 25 to 50% fewer deer per acre. One reason for the lower density on reservations is that tribes and their members tend to harvest deer at higher rates. That's according to Jonathan Gilbert, Director of Biological Services with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission.
It's their cultural regulations that permit this. So tribal members are out harvesting deer for food primarily. They want to be able to do that during a broad range of times, so not only during 9 days in November.
Officials with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest say the study may help guide future management decisions across northern forests. The Ashland Daily Press reports Governor Scott Walker signed a bill this week that allows the town of Cable to use a financing tool for the planned $47 million remodel of the Telemark Lodge. The bill allows the town to create a tax incremental financing, or TIF, district. A TIF district would allow increased property tax revenues created by the project to pay for the lodge's remodeling or improvements in that area. State Senator Janet Buley of Mason and State Representative Beth Myers of Bayfield supported the legislation. The Daily Press reports developer HK Hospitality is continuing to move forward on plans to remodel the lodge. Governor Scott Walker also signed a bill allowing the muzzleloader deer hunt to continue on the Apostle Islands. The hunt was banned on the islands in recent years due to an unintended consequence related to a provision in an earlier state budget. Under current law, only the Youth Hunt, Disabled Hunter Deer Hunt, and Learn to Hunt programs could take place before the gun deer season in November. But for years, people have taken part in the muzzleloader deer hunt on the Apostle Islands in October. That bill was also authored and co-sponsored by Senator Buley, Representative Myers, and State Representative Nick Milroy of South Range. The annual Blessing of the Port was held yesterday evening at the Lake Superior Maritime Center in Duluth. Reverend Doug Paulson is the director of the Twin Ports Ministry to Seafarers. He says the event began more than a decade ago to mark the beginning of the shipping season.
The other thing, too, is, one of the things I do in my work is I go on all the international ships. And so it's a time for me to also remember the crew members who are away from their families for such a long time, who have to deal with the dangers of being on ship in the Atlantic at certain times of the year, and who provide so much for our livelihood in this area, too.
The Duluth Seaway Port Authority is expecting a strong shipping season. More than 35 million tons of cargo moved through the Twin Ports last year. This week also marked the arrival of the Federal Vaser, the first salty of the season. This has been Wisconsin Public Radio's Week in Review, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/KUWSFM, and you can find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.